to the skies very high.
Hello and welcome to Talking PPG Radio. My name is Will Jones. The following information is not for training, but personal experiences and reflections on the world of power paragliding as I know. All guests of Talking PPG Radio have formed their own ideas, thoughts, and opinions on the world of power paragliding. They are not necessarily the thoughts or opinions of Talking PPG Radio. You may agree or disagree to what you hear. Talking PPG Radio is here to get conversations, thoughts, ideas about the world of power paragliding. Safety first. I highly recommend a qualified instructor. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoy.
Hey guys, welcome back. Will Jones talking PPG Radio. Hey, got a couple things for you today. I talked to Britton Shaw about the 9th annual Memorial Day fly-in, the Endless Foot Drags, May 22nd through the 26th. We'll get right into that. Then I kind of finish up what went on at the Palm Bay fly-in. You kind of listen in on Jeff Goin gave an airspace it's kind of seminar, and then you also get to listen in. I'm gonna let you listen in on the UPS, or not UPS, I'm sorry, the USPA meeting that was there. So that's what I have for you today. Sit back, relax. Thank you for listening. Hopefully, and I apologize for I just talked to a friend. He said that there was kind of some feedback problems with the Don Jordan interview. That was off of my telephone. And so it probably wasn't quite as clear. Hopefully I kind of cleared it up a little bit, but hopefully you were able to understand. And hopefully you got some great information from Chris Bowles at Fresh Breeze. Go check out his website and great motor stuff. So like I said, first up, Britton Shaw, 9th annual Memorial Day fly-in, Endless Foot Drags, May 22nd through the 26th. And then I will finish up, and I'll be back, and then we'll finish up with the Palm Bay stuff. All right, sit back, relax. Will Jones talking PPG Radio. Thanks.
Hey, guys. Got in touch with Britton Shaw here. We got the 9th annual Memorial Day flying coming in, May 22nd through the 26th. Foot drag. I haven't talked to Britton probably in how long? At least. It's funny because this is the weirdest thing. I remember one time you were at the St. Louis airport and I was going through or something like that. Or was it in Texas? I mean, that's kind of how we end up talking to each other every once in a while. So, well, welcome back to the show, Britton, man. Great talking to you.
Yeah, thank you, Will. Thank you, Will. I appreciate it. And your show's always great. Look forward to it.
Oh, man. And guys, if you don't know, Britton was like one of the first people I actually interviewed several years ago when I started this, so it's like, you know, he's always welcome to the show. So, but hey, man, it looks like you got things going again. We're trying to get some information for the guys that, you know, that hopefully are going to come that way. Like I was just telling you, I'm saying no, but it's one of those deals. If I get a chance, I will be there. You know, it's that type of deal. I know a lot of people know I've been into face painting and stuff a lot, and a lot of the weekends and Memorial Day and all that stuff is usually a time of festivals and stuff here in Louisville. And so it's like make money or spend money. But don't forget,
a lot of us know how that goes.
Oh.
Well, we're going to miss you again, but I'll tell you what, we're going to have another really exciting fly-in. For those that haven't ever been to Arklahoma, we have a beautiful sod farm. This thing is just, it just goes on as far as your eyes can see. Lots of room to play. The different scenery is a nice bonus. So we've got flatlands, we've got mountains. So for the guys that like to do motoring and free flight, it's heaven down here. Chad Bastian is putting on the instructor clinic again. We'll be hosting right now I think it's the only leg of the national competition.
Oh, yes, that's right. I forgot even about that. Yes, yes, yes. Okay.
So we're going to have a good time with that. Superfly has donated some pylons for the event. Ryan Shaw with Peregrinolin has donated some really nice timers. He's going to bring those. That'll be a first for us here for the competition.
Okay.
lots of really neat things going on. And then, as always, we've got the clinics that will be going on. In addition to the instructor clinics, we'll have the PPG1, PPG2 clinics available. And, you know, those clinics, I think there are a lot of folks that have the wrong idea.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yes. we get a lot of the, well, anyone who's connected online can see a lot of the posts about why do I need to belong to a clique. And, you know, it's really about pilot improvement. And I think if folks give these fly-ins a chance, they come to know that very quickly.
Yes.
So, you know what? It's not about the clique. It's about pilot improvement. And just connecting with the other pilots is a bonus on top of that. So folks get to train with some of the best pilots in the world here, and they get to roundtable discuss a lot of items. And just like any other fly-in, there are lots of demo equipment available. Hmm. So wings, motors, all the latest and greatest. And what a better place to try it out than a manicured sod farm as far as your eye can see.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, man, that's got to be great. I mean, the pictures and, you know, talking to people that actually have been there and everything. Now, real quick, it is a ratings. Ratings are required, if I remember correctly. Some type of rating
what
is required.
What we do, Will, is okay. We welcome everyone.
Okay.
And the condition is that either the participant needs to be with their instructor to attend, or they need to enroll in one of the clinics.
Okay.
So if they're not already rated.
Okay. Well, you know, and it's funny because I was the Palm Bay fly-in this year, and they had the USPA meeting. And one of the questions I asked Jeff was about the guys that actually, you know, like me, I've been flying for about 7 years and still really don't, you know, I took the test for the PPG1 and I'm going to take the test for PPG2. But the guys that actually have, you know, experience in everything, will they be able just to be tested like, you know, flying, you know, there, because Jeff was saying, well, you know, the only thing you really got to do is you got to do some of the things that we ask you to do and we can sign you off. Will that be available for the guys that have been flying for a year where, you know, oh, I don't know, I want to go? That's the, like you said, the people that are like, you know, trying to shy away from it because a rating is actually required.
Correct. Well, it's a great question. So what typically happens with, let's just say someone's been flying for years, they don't have any USPPA ratings. They are still required to go through the clinic portion where they have to demonstrate the skills. So there are minimum qualifications for each one of those ratings, and they do have to demonstrate that, as well as they got to pass the written test. And so, you know, there's as long as they can demonstrate the knowledge in the syllabus that's required for that particular rating, you don't have to spend a certain amount of hours on that particular topic. So again, as long as that instructor can gauge that student's level of understanding and approve them to take the test, then that's just an open area for opportunity. Yeah. But you know, something else on these ratings, something that hits home here is, you know, I brag a lot about the largest sod farm in the central U.S. here that we've got. You know, the owners have been so generous to us over the years. It was years ago that we had a little hiccup at the sod farm, and it was during one of the fly-ins, and no one got severely injured, but the landowners became concerned. You know, everyone was concerned about liability, and they said, hey, you know what? I think we need to make sure that we're regulating this to a point to protect us, to protect you, but more for them, and I can completely understand it. And that's when we started going down the route of the ratings path.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I remember.
You know, they just.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's all right. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think one year you had to shift locations because of, you know, that kind of that in-between point. I do remember, if I'm remembering correctly. I don't think you canceled it, but you kind of moved it, if I believe. Or did you cancel? I can't remember. But
no, we did have to move the location.
Yeah.
But we finally got everything sorted out.
Out and everything, yeah.
There was another year that we had to move it, but that was for flooding reasons.
Oh, okay.
We had a monsoon of the season, and
yeah,
we actually moved the location down to the base of one of the mountains, which was really beautiful.
Yeah, one of your free flight areas.
Yes,
yeah.
We're only about 30 minutes away from some really nice mountain launch sites. So, again, lots of opportunity here. The scenery is magnificent. So, we're really looking forward to it. Going to be a really good time.
Okay. Hey, guys, the fee is $35 for all pilots, am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Huh? And you can go to www.rvppg.com and click on the fly-in. It will give you all the information and everything. Looks like you have Facebook, too, there.
We've got a Facebook page, and that website of mine in phonetics would be Romeo Victor Papa Papa Golf.
Okay.
So a lot of folks get mistyped that a lot, but you can always search Arkansas Paragliding to me that way.
Do what I did. I put in endless foot drags, something other. I put in RVPPG or whatever like that, and I'm like, am I putting it in right? Wait a minute. Hold on. Endless foot drags. And blam, there was PPG, and it came up, So
we got a Facebook site up for it. I'm not sure if that's searchable or not, but you could sure try that out.
Yeah.
But definitely, there is a link to the Facebook page on the website.
Yes.
And we'd like folks that are planning on or thinking about coming to go ahead and commit to that. That way, that helps me out with things like T-shirt orders.
Okay.
I don't require anyone to prepay. It's just a really laid back flying, but I do like to have shirts available if everyone shows up and they're interested in one.
Well, excellent. Let's see. Organized flying begins Friday, May 24th.
Yes, and as always, pilots are more than welcome to show up as early as they'd like. We've got folks that will come in a week ahead of time, especially a lot of these folks that might be interested in mountain flying. They can come in and do that a little bit early.
Mm.
And as always, folks can stay longer. So, we're just real laid back, hillbilly land, kick back, have a good time.
Dry camping?
Stay as long as you'd like.
It is dry camping?
Yes. Now, okay. there are no hookups, so generators are required, but we've got the ability to support everything up to the largest RV that you can imagine.
Yeah. Okay.
All the way down to just throwing a sleeping bag out on this nice soft sod and sleeping out in the dark.
You keep on bragging about that sod, man. What the heck? I'm just saying. Well, cool.
Nice, Will. It's so nice to have that luxury of, it's just like playing on somebody's soft lawn as far as you can see. It's great.
That is too cool. Guys, a variety of fast food restaurants in the area. I didn't know if you guys were going to have an organized type of maybe meal or something like that, or is just kind of bring your own or go out and eat type deal.
We are so close to town. I mean, just a couple of minutes from major eating establishments,
mm-hmm.
major hotel chains. As a matter of fact, Fort Smith has a really nice airport. We've got commercial air service offered with American Airlines and Delta.
And Delta.
So right. I've had quite a few folks that are planning on flying in. And that airport, we're only 5 miles away. We're just outside of that veil. And every year, the control tower and the Razorback approach is so generous, they give us a huge block of airspace.
Oh, do they really?
So,
wow.
Oh, yeah. This town really caters to us, and, yeah, very nice of them.
Let me ask you one more thing. How about the guys, I see you said something about transitioning from PPG to PG. Is there anything in particular that, let's say, the PG guys need to bring, or what is available for them that they could use, like renting equipment or something like that for the guys that actually want to try some free flight?
Yeah, just to very briefly touch on that, we have a lot of equipment that is available for folks to borrow, and if we don't have enough, we can just share between the students, but it would be very helpful if folks have a reserve, they could bring that. It's kind of hard for us to get a lot of reserves, but in order to mount and fly, a certified wing is required. So, a lot of the wings that are folks are using for paramotoring these days that are not certified can't be flown off of our site. So, if it's certified, it's fine.
So, okay.
We have refined our local mountain launches to the point that, take for example, a MacPara Muse can reach the landing area with no problem.
No problem at all. Oh, excellent.
With glides. So. Yeah, good stuff. And we got plenty of radios and things like that to share. And if anybody's interested in learning more about that opportunity, they're welcome to contact me directly.
Okay. Well, let's see. Give them your email address or number that they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, email address is britton.shaw@gmail.com. That's BRITTON.SHAW. That again is at gmail.com. And then telephone number for me is 479-629-6184.
Oh, great. Man, it's good talking to you and everything. I was just getting ready. I'm going to post this pretty quick here. Hopefully I have it up here in the next day so I can get it out there for everybody and get the information. And like I said, if I get a chance, yes, I will be that way.
I'm sorry we're going to miss you this time. Maybe it'll work out next year.
Yeah. I've got to put it on my calendar is what I got to do. That's one of the things I keep forgetting to do is like, okay, I'm going to go to this fly-in, and I'm not going to schedule anything. And this year has been crazy. Work is like driving me. I mean, it's just, work is good. Don't get me wrong. You know, money is good, but it's been so busy. So, but man, it is good talking to you. And guys, go check it out. Hopefully you guys will get a chance to go check out this unbelievable sod, which you couldn't really tell that Britton was bragging at all about it, but hey, there you go.
Oh, goodness.
Great. All right, man. Thanks a lot.
All right, Will. Thank you.
All right, there, guys. There you go, Britton Shaw. Definitely go check out. That is www.rvppg.com. And if you wonder what the RV means, it's River Valley Paragliding. So, endless foot drags. I've got to go and check this out, guys. I've talked to Britton. Was one of the first ones I've talked to when I first started up my podcast, and I've been saying I'm gonna go, and it seems like every year something has come up. So anyway, go check it out, and hopefully you got some information there that will help you out. Up next, we're gonna finish up the Palm Bay fly-in, which was great. You get to listen basically to the seminar of the airspace that Jeff did. And, he is actually coming out with a video of, like his master PPG videos with some animation and stuff, and which I can't wait to get to check out about airspace. So I got to get Jeff on here, because he actually ended up moving to Florida and stuff, and I've been wanting to talk to him about the move and all that and what he's working on. So we'll get Jeff on here pretty soon and try to get caught up with him. I haven't talked to him in a while, so talked to him when I was down there, but actually talked to him on a show as to see what's happening. Let's get going. I'm just rambling now, so let's get going. Sit back, relax. Thanks for listening in again. Will Jones talking PPG Radio. Up next, the Palm Bay. Finish up the Palm Bay stuff, so. Thanks.
On your chart, it's G at the surface, E at 1200 or 700. Almost over the whole country. We got that. right? And now you guys just came. Thank you for coming. Inside of the magenta circles on the charts, the magenta vignetted circles on the chart, which is where it drops to 700. In E, this is all E. Basically, E is everywhere. E is everywhere except for G at the ground, where we launch. G at the ground up to 700 or 1200 feet. Around airports, it's usually the 700 part. Around this airport, as we just showed, there is no... I'm going to pass this around. We are on the blue dot here at Valkyria Airport. I know you can't see this. Even as big as this phone is, you probably can't see that. There's a purple line, a purple shaded line that goes around these airports. Oh good, I just drew on my shirt. And that's where the E, which over this whole thing, picture there's E above here, there's G at the surface, E above here, that E starts at 1,200 feet, except around here, and it drops to 700, and around here. Here we are at Valkyria. Notice we're not inside of one of those shaded areas. So the E is 1,200 feet above us. And now, let's. I'm going to pass that around. Everybody just take a gander at that. So those areas that were the magenta circle, those magenta circles look like this if you're looking at them edge on. 1,200 feet, drops to 700, goes back up to 1,200. And this is the airport. This is where we're launching. At our airport today, there is this 700 transition area doesn't exist. Which surprises the hell out of me because it's a pretty big airport. But out of most airports this size, you'll see it.
Is that temporary or is that just...
No, it's permanent. This airport doesn't have it. It has to do with instrument approaches. Does this airport have them? All right, so visibility and cloud clearance. I know you got this. Down below, or in G airspace, the visibility is a mile and clear clouds. All right, that's where we launch every time. If you know nothing else, then we're going to launch in G airspace, and we need a mile and clear clouds until we get up to 700 or 1,200 feet. If you got that, you've got 90% of all your flying. So, now you want to go up a high. You need 5, 1, 2, and 3. 500 below the clouds, 1,000 above, 3 miles, 500 below, 1,000 above, 2,000 feet horizontally, and 3 miles visibility. Alright, any questions on that? A mile and clear clouds down here, 5, 1, 2, and 3 up here.
Is that the only difference between G and E?
That's the only difference. If the visibility is good, you don't care about if you can stay that far away from the clouds. Let's say it's a clear day and you've got 3 miles visibility. You can fly anywhere you want almost over the entire country. Right? The difference between G and E is irrelevant on a nice day with no clouds. And, you know, I spent so much time on this because this is what really matters. This is where we're going to be. Now we're going to talk about, now we'll go over the other stuff, all right? But you all understand that. In fact, before we leave that, let's talk about why that is. Look at these clouds out here. You notice the flat bottoms? That's typical. So if you're in an airplane busting along at 200 knots, and you're below those clouds, you can be only 500 feet below, and you're almost certain that there's not going to be a cloud between you and the traffic that you're trying to avoid. So you can be only 500 feet below, and it's not so bad. But look at the tops. The tops are ragged. So they want you higher above those ragged differential tops. That's why that number's higher. And this number, at 2,000, an airplane going 200 knots is covering like 5 miles a minute or something. It's gonna cover that in 5 seconds. So that's why this number is the biggest, because he doesn't care what the clouds are. If you're up high and he's on instruments, he's pounding through them. I've taken great video from the Boeing. I have flown right over my home site up in Chicago, my paramotor launch site. And we're at 3,000 feet. We're below the beam, and we're going 200 knots. So we're chewing up 5 miles a minute. And we're out there where you guys, where I, where we fly paramotors. So that number right there, and we're pounding through clouds. We're pounding through these clouds right here. So you're legal to be up there in a 737 to pop out the side, going 250, that's almost 300 miles an hour.
The 737 is going to win.
Bingo. The problem is, here's the bummer. A bird has almost taken out a big airplane if it hits the right place. Think of what 250 pounds of paramotor pilot would do. So it could end up everybody. The quickest way out of this sport, I think, is to run one of us into an airline. Kill everybody on board. Alright, so you see the why of this, and I think it helps to understand the why these rules came into place to be a little longer term. Now, above 10,000 feet, I'm not even going to bore you with the numbers. Alright? Suffice it to say, the numbers are a lot bigger. Why is that? Why are these numbers bigger? Because they take all the rules off of speed above 10,000 feet. We're actually limited in the jets to 250 knots below 10. So if you go above 10 and you're anywhere near a terminal area, you might as well put a bullseye on your ass because we're not going to see you. You accelerate to 320 knots, plus you're up high, you're going 400 plus miles an hour. You pop out of the side of one of these clouds, and this guy's the bare minimum away, and that assumes that we're looking. Right? Southwest 455, climb and maintain, 15,000, turn right, heading 320, when able to direct such and such. So, you got this pilot on here, he's looking down here, dialing the radio. Southwest such and such, up to 15,000, what was that destination, the fix again? He's looking at the radio, now he's looking up at the FMS. The flying guy is over here, he ain't looking for you. He's looking down here, the same thing. Okay, what's the fix? Because he's got to hit direct. So, you don't have a chance. You got like 5 seconds. So everybody sees why. Above 10,000 feet, we'll just say this is 10,000 here. The 14.5 is for something else. So above 10,000 feet, you just need to know that all these clearances go way up. All right, now let's talk about those few places that we cannot fly. We know we can't fly above 18. We can't fly where there's control towers, right? And those are blue, and there's a blue magenta line around. We can't fly in those areas. There's prohibited areas. We can't fly in those. So I have 14 minutes, so we're going to cover this kind of quick. Isn't that wonderful? That's a good thing about having something going on right afterwards.
We have a section.
Yeah, in the Enterprise there is one. Would you mind? Yeah. So we can't fly in prohibited areas. They're marked on the charts. And we can't fly in... Here, Phil has done a great job with this. So, the blue airports with control towers, if they have a control tower, they are E airspace. So we launch in G, because we're always starting from the ground, up to 7 or 1200 feet, then we're in E. And E is everywhere. In B, that's where the control towers are. They typically only go out about 5 regular miles and up to 2,500 feet. Legally, you can fly over those things because we're in E. Might not be a good idea, but we can fly over them. And then B and C are the big terminals. B is the big airport. C, you think commuters, for commuter airports. And you need permission to fly in there. I'm not going to confuse you with the visibility limits that change inside of those things. Because, oh, awesome. Let me hold it up. Unless you want to model it.
Well, I can help you hold it.
Oh, that's a good idea. Okay, so, okay, you want to hold it?
Want to flip it the other way?
No, that's not the chart.
Right,
you want to flip it right side up.
That's right.
Oh, that's a very good idea. Okay, so here's a cool thing. When you look at this chart, let's forget that we're not going to go offshore. Over the entire chart, it's what kind of airspace are you going to launch in? Over this entire chart, you can expect that you're in what kind of airspace?
GG.
And what's your cloud clearance and visibility?
Oh. Clear clouds.
One mile and clear clouds. If you take nothing else away from this plane, You're launching in G airspace, and you need a mile and clear clouds. 700 to 1,200 feet above you, you need more. All right? You can ask questions on the more if you have them. But if you know that, you've got most of this down. So over this entire chart, it's G at the surface and E above at 700 or 1,200 feet. Now what about this magenta circle around here? See that magenta circle around there? What does that mean? That takes the floor of E, which is normally 12, down to 7. So over the entire chart, the floor of E is 1,200 feet, except in there, it's 700. All right, look in here. All of these areas, that magenta, all of those magenta circles means is that the floor of E drops from 1,200 out here down to 700. You can still launch in there, you just need a little more visibility when you get up to 700 feet. All right? Any questions on that? That's the key. Now, let's talk about some of this other stuff. Here, let's open that. Phil has drawn this really nicely. The airspace with control towers, those are the blue dashed lines. B and C, big airports, have the solid blue lines. We'll show that on the chart. C, solid magenta lines, commuter airports, even though they can be pretty big airports. For example, Midway Airport, that's a C airspace, and we need permission to fly into those. So let's look at those on the chart. So we talked about all of this is open to us. It's all E above 1,200. And then see these solid blue lines are where the B airspace is. But the beauty of this is we can fly there. So let's say you're out here. You're at this Opa-locka Airport. In fact, I don't know. Do you see this magenta line around here?
Right.
Yeah, good idea. Good idea. See this magenta? Where's Opa-locka there? See this magenta shade? Tell me, you're launching in what kind of airspace at Opa-locka? G, everybody sees that? Visibility, cloud clearance? All right. Now, you see this magenta around here. How high do you climb before you get into the E above you? I hear 12. Do I hear anything else? I hear 12. I hear 7. No? 12. We'll go for 12. And the reason why is because it's all E 12 except inside
the magenta.
Inside of there at 700 feet. So this airport is just outside of that 700-foot transition area, so it's 1,200 feet.
Yeah.
Now, here's the beauty of it. Can we launch there? Yes, we can. Here's why. So the B airspace, we know we can't fly in, but it goes in shells. Just like Phil has drawn it over here, at the surface, inside of here, we can't fly. That's in the B. But out here, there's a shell. You'll see these little numbers, 2070. You'll find that 7-0 is all over. He, by the way, is not having as much fun as we are. So look in here. You see that? The 3-0 and the 7-0, they're all 7-0s on the top because the top of the whole B airspace, the top of the wedding cake, the upside down wedding cake, is 7,000. So the number that we're interested in is the one below here. The 3-0 means that the floor of that shelf is 3,000 MSL above sea level. So let's look at this Opa-locka. It's all in that area where it's 7-0 and 3-0. Everybody see the 7-0 and 3-0? Meaning that shelf is 3,000 MSL, so we can launch at that airport and we can fly up to 3,000 MSL above mean sea level. How about out here? This is interesting. This is good to know because you want to know that you can ignore this. It says mode C, 30 miles. That does not apply to us. It's never mentioned in 103 that we have to comply with that. You'll hear people say that you do. You don't. You'll hear controllers say that you do if you ever talk to controllers. I've had this happen to me. Why don't you have a transponder? Which they're really clueless because I don't have an electrical system. So even airplanes don't need a transponder if they have an electrical system. But that happens. You know, the FAA doesn't know these rules.
It's bizarre.
It is bizarre. The FAA inspector will tell you that you were closer than 500 feet to something.
I have it happen.
Yeah, we can tell you all about it. Yeah, Chris is another airline geek. And They know those rules. He has to stay not just 1,000 feet above a congested area, and we can't go above a congested area at all, so he gets to do that. But he has to stay 500 feet away from any man-made thing. That's why I want to keep this thing out of that whole 91 type regulation. Because we can legally fly down a road dragging our feet.
Yeah, and to give it that perspective, once people realize what everything else is, as far as regulation and airspace goes, then we really realize how good we actually have.
Right. We have it really good. So, this doesn't apply, the 500 foot rule doesn't apply. But now let's look at some more of this thing. So we understand the B airspace, we can't fly in there without permission. And I doubt any of us is going to get permission to fly in the B airspace. Did you get permission to TNA? Well, he doesn't. I haven't even gotten permission to talk to a cruise control, but I didn't go into the B airspace. I didn't want to put up with all the laughter that I knew would ensue. So here's the C.
Camp Pendleton restricted.
Oh, it gets better.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Intentionally on radio.
Like we call them ahead, you know, we
got it all.
Got it all
straight
down.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but you
got
your mandatory.
That's right.
He goes through, you know, one of the busiest airspaces.
I heard about that.
Yeah, and then he gets hit by a glider, a model glider, a toy glider, takes out his whole left side. Damn. So here's the C. That is around Fort Lauderdale. Fort Lauderdale doesn't have B airspace. So look at this. You can fly down the beach here because this C is just like the B, but it's purple. And it's smaller. So in this area, down the beach, you can see the 40 and the 12. So that means the top of it is 4,000, the bottom of it is 1,200. So if you were flying down the beach, you can legally fly that beach right there at up to 1,200 feet MSL. So what about, we already talked about control tower, the Ds that have the blue lines, dashed blue lines. Now notice that there's a dashed blue line around here, all of these little airports are blue. They're all blue, they all have control towers, so they all have D airspace around them, which again, it goes up to about 2,500 above the ground, which they mark as a top inside of a D. That 25 there, if you can see where my finger is pointing at, that's 2,500 MSL is the top of it. Legally, we can fly over the top of it. That would be a surprisingly bad idea. Surprisingly bad idea. Because if there's a control tower, why do you suppose there's a control tower there? There's traffic! There's enough traffic to warrant it. So I wouldn't go there. All right, now let's look at another interesting case. So we talked about the 4V is... Oops, 3 minutes. The 4V is 700 feet inside of Magenta or 1,200 feet outside of Magenta. But here's an exception that we mentioned. This airport right here, look down here. Dade Collier. See the Magenta dash line? It's just like a control tower, but it's Magenta. All that does is take E to the surface, which for these guys doesn't matter. They can fly there, no problem. Unfortunately, there's a clause in our regulation that says we're not allowed to fly in the following places. A, B, C, D, or the surface area of E designated for an airport. So we are prohibited from flying in there without permission. Another little tidbit. Nobody knows it! Nobody knows it! So, permission. Where do you get permission? Well, number one, if there is an approach control, like Miami, that's probably who controls it. That's probably who you would call for that airport. You can find out on the side of the chart that tells you the communications for airports where it's required. So, you call Orlando or Miami Approach Control, and they're going to say, yeah, we don't control that. Like, okay, I just want to let you know that I'll be flying there and make sure you're okay with it. Yeah, that's fine. I've never had anybody deny me. I did have this happen one time. I had an airport manager come up to me. I was getting ready to launch at an airport just like that. And I had called. In this case, it was run by the Air Route Traffic Control Center. I had called the center. And I got that response. Well, you know, you don't need permission. just wanted to let you know and make sure it was okay. You don't tell him you knew. Don't argue. Just tell him I wanted to make sure you knew about it. And it's okay. So now you're on a recorded line getting permission if anything were to come up. And now the airport manager came up. He asked me, do you guys have permission to fly here? I said, yep, I called the center. Or in this case, yep, I called Miami Approach. So, just so you know, we can't fly there at any altitude. That regulation says within the lateral confines. It actually puts that. It doesn't say, the way it words it is that we can't fly there at any altitude.
So what that means is,
if you are trying to fly,
when they close this tower, this becomes E, and then this goes up to Ferraro.
Yeah, you know, we need to check that.
But that's how it can be interpreted?
Yeah, we need to check that, because I remember looking at that. When a control tower closes.
With a Class E servicer?
Yeah.
What happened?
No, with Class D.
Class D.
So D becomes surface area D. So you can't go in here for sure. And then some people are trying to argue that since it's E, this E is continuous, not just this section of E, but E is also here. And that means that we can't go in here because this whole E is associated with the surface.
Yeah. What the argument is do you have EFT, AFT on your phone? Or
not AFT. I have the AM.
Well, that's absurd.
But what you're saying is
it has 3,000 feet.
Well, okay. So the Phil's thing is sometimes the control tower is closed. Now normally it's after dark, but not always. Sometimes it's 5 p.m. and we can fly there. Or sometimes it's weekends. But it is true, and I don't think there's much interpreting this part. That Opa-locka airport we were looking at, with the dashed magenta lines around it, that's Class E, but within the lateral confines, that goes out into space. So if you want to fly on Mars, you could be in trouble.
Wouldn't it start and stop at 18? That's right.
Nope.
You can't fly that either, but...
Nope. A goes from...
18 to 60.
To 60.
Right, so the top of the E would be at the bottom of the A.
Doesn't say that.
Yeah, it doesn't. You're right.
So, it is a ridiculous thing. It's more comical than anything. And, you know, that's kind of a minor point. But I remember thinking this and looking this up, and it may revert to something else. It may revert to G at the surface.
I think that's what it does, because what you're saying is when the Class D closes.
Right. So let's look that up.
No. When the tower closes, D becomes E.
Yeah, we need to look that up.
Okay.
But it is. I don't think it becomes E unless there's a charted E surface.
We'll look it up, okay? Because I've been, and it's funny, some of it has already faded. I've been looking so much of this stuff up for the airspace video, and I've learned a few things, and that I seem to remember was one of them. It's like, geez, I thought that became E.
It does.
All right. Can you pull up the... All right, well, anyway. Any questions? Airspace questions. Question.
When I look at the section, I can't figure out, I see military practice arms, low jet practice, or whatever. I can't figure out whether that's an advisory or keep your hands out.
Okay. There's two primary constructs. There's prohibited, keep your ass out, and restricted. Our advisory. The advisories are, and let's look here. The advisories are a lot bigger on military airspace. Well, first of all, who's here for the USPA membership meeting? So we got, okay, all right, good. Well, we're going to have to start that shortly as well, but you guys object if we have a few, if we do a few more minutes on airspace. Okay, so let's look at this. The vast majority of the military airspace that's taken is advisory. Now, there's military routes on here, but unfortunately, I don't have the sectional. Now, in general, if it's magenta, it's advisory. If it's blue, it's prohibited. Yeah, in general. Another thing is, so like on this chart right here, we've got an area down here. Oops, upside down again. Alert area. That, unfortunately, that's an exception. Concentrated flight training. We can fly in alert areas. See, these are all, so that's why I said generally. If it's prohibited or restricted, if it says prohibited or restricted, then we can't go in there. If it says alert, MOA, or there's a couple other things, then we can go in there. Yeah. Another thing about military airspace, most of the time it doesn't apply. Yeah. They're either not effective, they're above us, or they are, they have some other restrictions. They're for a certain altitude, or for certain times, something like that. All right, any other airspace video questions, or airspace questions?
So
I've been working on it. What?
So G is a mild and clear clouds during the day, but at night.
Oh no, don't go there.
Half hour after sunset, 1 hour before.
Why confuse it?
Okay.
We don't fly at night. It's why I don't go into all these other numbers.
Okay.
You know, really, we fly in G, a mild and clear clouds, we fly in E with 5, 1, 2, and 3.
You can use a slower code. Half hour.
Before. Half hour, yeah.
Yeah.
You'll notice that, you know, it's, people don't do that, even those two things well. All right, yeah. That makes sense. Okay. And with that, the USPPA General Membership Member Meeting is called to order. This is basically just, and take questions and answers. And also, let's get the officers up here, and Dave, he's, you know, his official title was the election chairman, but he's helping us with a bunch of other roles. So come on up, Alex. Where's Paul? Paul,
the time might have caught up. I mean, it did me. I was shocked at how late it was.
Yeah. So.
I'll email it to you.
Chris?
That's interesting.
What is that?
We found the. I found the thing in the name about the class name.
Hey, what does it say?
At those airports where the control tower is not operated 24 hours a day, the operating hour of the tower will be listed on the appropriate charge and an AFD. During the hour that the tower is not in operation, Class E surface area rules or a combination of Class E rules from 700 feet above the ground and Class G rules from there to the surface for the apron.
So it's a case-by-case basis?
Check, and it's in the AFD.
Check the AFD.
Check the AFD.
Pull up an online AFD. Are you online?
I don't have...
Pull up an AFD entry for an airport like that, Mansfield, KMFD.
Is there an AFD online?
Yeah, there is. If you Google online AFD, you might want to spell out airport facility directory. Okay, so Chris right there, I guess, you know, and we're missing...
treasurer.
The treasurer.
I don't have Paul's number.
Paul Zarnecki.
Don't have...
All right, so we got Alex, Chris, and Dave is helping us. We're going to do... We had a meeting last night... And we're making a lot of changes to basically the organization is going to the next level. For a long time, it's been mom and pop, Jeff and Tim, running the thing. And now we got some people that are really, they're intensely interested in seeing it grow and seeing it be done in a professional, transparent manner. But the big thing about it is we got people to do work. Paul is going to probably be doing it. Also, Christine, unfortunately, Christine is not here. She is now essentially running the organization on a day-to-day basis. Christine is an absolute sweetheart. She's a flight attendant for Lufthansa on leave. I didn't even realize that or remember it. So she's running the thing on a day-to-day. When you have a contact with USPA, it now goes to her. And if someone asks a question she doesn't understand, she sends it to the appropriate people. Chris Pine has offered to do the airspace stuff when people have either airspace or legal questions. Because he's not just an airline pilot, but he's also interested in it. Because I got to tell you, the people who know airspace the least regarding us are airline pilots. They don't care where G is because they never use it. You know, we're not even allowed to fly in it. So it's all irrelevant. But Chris knows because of this stuff, and he's just interested. So now, if you send an airspace question, Christine forwards it to Chris. And Tim is working in an advisory role now more than anything. Paul is going to be dealing with all the finances, and he's got all the stuff. He's going to be doing all the finances. We may get an external audit just to make sure we're in compliance with all the 501c3 stuff. I mean, we have been for these years, but who knows? If the thing gets bigger, you want to have it so that you got it on record, and it probably depends on how much it costs. But we've been very frugal. The organization has about probably $48,000 in the bank.
Yeah.
Which
is probably 50, actually.
Okay. Which is because it's all run on volunteers. You know, we're not paying for much. Jerry Starbuck, a paramotor pilot, built our website. He did that for free. That was a lot. Not the the front page, USPPA.org. I did that for free. But the one that works, anything that works on USPPA, works because Jerry's program, all of the automated rating stuff and the list of instructors, that's all done by Jerry Starbuck. And now he is charging us, but I can tell you what, he is being extraordinarily fair with the charges. So by being frugal, we've got money in the bank to do. In fact, that's why we have a training reimbursement program. That was Chris Bowles' idea. It's like, what, you know, we got this money, it's growing. At that time, it was growing at a faster rate. Let's be careful where we spend it. And he came up with the idea of the training reimbursement. That's brilliant. Let's put our money where our mouth is. If we think training is valuable, let's give a reimbursement. But it doesn't take much of a mathematician to think, well, wait a minute, if everybody comes into your organization pays $34, and they get a $100 rebate, that's kind of a short-term solution. But what's happened is that most people realize it's a charity organization. People are volunteering their time, and really, we actually give out very few of them. We get very few requests. Well, we don't mind. It's not to say don't do it, but we give out very few. We pay for writing. We pay for pictures. It ain't much, and most people donate the time. Just like other organizations that do this, the USHGA, because I've written for a number of them, and they will send you a letter saying, here's what you're due. If you're willing to donate your time, we would appreciate it. And I'll bet a lot of authors do, because what they pay is so little, it doesn't really matter. Anyway, we'll be probably over the next year, we'll be trying to change some of the structure. Right now, there's four officers, four elected positions. It sounds like Alex is going to work on a rewrite of the bylaws. I wrote the bylaws. Bylaws are like a computer program. You want to try to anticipate what, you know, what's going to happen, what bad things can happen in the future. Because maybe someone's not as devoted to it. They may not care as much. They may not care about preserving the assets as much. You want to do some protection. Or what about conflict of interest? You know, how do you protect against that? You got to kind of write, that's what the bylaws are, it's kind of software against that kind of stuff to give you guidelines. Well, you know, I wrote them. I'm not a bylaw guy. And they need to be modified. And they've needed it for a long time, but it's just a lot of work. And it's really boring. I gotta tell you. So, and Alex has been really helpful. And I don't mind helping, but David is an, what would you call it? A structural guru. Yeah. Kingpin has worked with a bunch of different organizations, and he's good with his stuff.
Just like Kingpin.
Kingpin, yeah. Sorry, David. He's going to help. So I think that's going to be a good thing. This meeting last night, another thing is, we want to try, I'm a big favor of, I would rather have fewer ratings and have them be meaningful than to have people giving them away and having bigger member numbers. So, you know, but how do you do that? How do you do that? How does Yushka do it? Well, Yushka does it because you all have to share the same hill. So instructor A is looking over at instructor B's student, screw up. Who did you learn with? And may go talk to him. You know, they're all out kind of for display. So there's some really constructive competitiveness. We don't have that. We've got a lot of people out on their own. I mean, part of my mission is to, number one, I never want to see this regulated. I never want to see it regulated by an organization. You should be able to go out and do your own thing. But at the same time, I want to see people trained. Because if somebody goes out and unwittingly goes somewhere they shouldn't, you know, I'm going to lose it too. We're all going to lose. So when one of our pilots, and I say our pilots, paramotor pilots collectively, goes out to a beach and screws up, who loses? Everybody who uses the beach. You know, so we all share a responsibility. And then let's say you have an event like this, a beach blast, and they say, no, you can't because we have no way of telling whether the pilots are qualified. They haven't demonstrated it. Well, now we got a way. And in fact, the beach blast the year before was supposed to be PPG 2 ratings according to the insurance. They didn't enforce it, but you know, that's the only way you could have the event there. So I'm not going to go to an organizer and say, you need ratings. But if the organizer said, hey, we need a way of telling that pilots are at a certain skill level, I want that program to be there and to work. So that's the second reason. So a good working ratings program both increases the likelihood a pilot will say, hey, I want to achieve this level. When I got into the sport, I'm looking around, you know, I want some standardized training. I don't want just what Joe Blow says I need. I want to know, have the instructors gotten together and say, hey, this is what we found works well. That's what we want to offer. That was a big part of it, is to have a standardized programming that that was written by a consensus of experienced instructors. So one of the changes that I think that we're going to be able to make is something like what we might in the airline business call a professional standards committee, some way of where you call students after the fact, after they've got their training, and just talk to them. Say, hey, you know, we want to know about your experience with the instructor, just make sure everything was done according to plan. And, you know, it's not like we're going to go after the instructor or anything, but it's a way of quality checking. That came up at this meeting, and I don't remember whose idea it was, but I really, really liked it. Because I've been, what's that?
Paul.
Paul, okay. Go ahead.
But what happens if you call student A of instructor 2 and student A has no idea what he's supposed to be doing or how? What do you do then? What's
okay. We had the meeting last night. This idea came up. The idea isn't actually like enforcement. On a professional standards committee, this is a different thing than how a professional standards committee works. But the professional standards people who are different than the training committee, would go talk to the pilot and say, hey, listen, we had a problem. We just want to get your side to it. And if, well, I didn't give him 25 flights because he had to go, but, you know, he was pretty close. Then we say, well, listen, we really need to do the 25. It's really important. We can't let it go. That's the way I envision it. Now, if it ever gets more than that, that's something for the groups to decide. You know, for the people that are working this idea to decide. But right now, that's how I envision it. I'm not doing it. You're going to, like, you know, head it up, look into these procedures. The person who does the calling is not going to be an instructor.
Part of it is the questions will be pretty benign. We got to figure them out, but like, were you presented with a syllabus, you know, a USPPA syllabus? Did you use the syllabus? So that's not really the student making a real big judgment, not with lack of knowledge. It's a simple yes or no.
Yeah, it's not a quiz, and it would be a form. The person who does the calling would be on a form, and they would ask the questions, and the results of that would give us some feedback. Because right now we have none. We have no idea. Someone could be out there issuing paper ratings. That to me, if I were to find that out and I were on the training committee, call the person, say, hey, listen, we can't do that. And the next time it happens, I'm sorry. That's not what we're about. That's the way I would do it if I were the training committee. And we just don't, you know, it's tough to do that. Nobody wants to be the police. Nobody in Yushka, nobody in USPA, nobody wants to do it. I can tell you that firsthand. So, but we got to have some way, I would like to see some way to have some feedback so that we can have an idea of whether the instructors are doing the program. And if they're not, let's talk to them. You know, right now it's peer. It's basically peer. Somebody has to,
the student's not going to say, hey, use car, training committee, I got my B2 rating, I only had 16 flights. Tell me that's going to happen. It's not. So I kind of like the idea. I thought it was brilliant, in fact, because it solved the problem as I've been wondering how do we do this. I was thinking about some other things about having a, you know, like how you can go onto Amazon and you can do ratings, but it's tough to do.
Too much personality involved in that.
Yeah, too much personality. And that's the other thing. It's got to be fair. Whatever we do, it's got to be fair. The organization has a lot of liability because an instructor, that's his livelihood. You don't mess with somebody's livelihood lightly. And as long as I'm president, that is not going to happen lightly. I'll fight it tooth and nail. You know, the ability to go to an instructor and pull a rating because you heard something. That's not the way it should be. I don't even like, there's some other stuff. What else? What else was at the meeting? Chris, am I leaving anything out? Those are the big things. Go ahead, David.
It seems to me that one of the primary goals of our organization now is to further engage the members. For the last decade or more, almost all of the work has fallen on a couple of pairs of shoulders, and we're grateful for that over the years. It has gotten this club to where it is. But we have a wealth of members out there, 635, 650 members, and they have skills out there that we can utilize. So some things that we kicked around as methods to draw that out of folks is to approach a new structure for the hierarchy of those people who run the organization. Primarily, we need to be certain in all instances that we're transparent, that all records are available to members. We have proposed giving regular treasurer's reports, secretary's reports, membership reports, and beyond that, expanding the four people who are now the current officers to a board of directors, which would include also a past president, perhaps a chairman of the training committee, and a number, two or three perhaps, of members at large that would be voted by the membership during the annual elections to be also on that board. And that board would be the group that would make the decisions as opposed to just the few officers.
Yeah, and it's a great idea. I mean, to engage more people is great.
I'm going to be generating a quarterly newsletter in an email form that is going down to the organization with input from the other officers. So anybody that's a member that has a current email address on file will take that.
Don't worry, it won't be pages and pages.
It's all pictures.
Yeah. All right. Anything else that I missed, guys?
No, nothing.
Hey, Jeff, have y'all thought about the guys that have been flying for a while and want to go ahead and get their ratings
Yes,
of course,
there is
most
absolutely
of
a way to do that.
Okay.
What you do is you go to an instructor and you simply perform the skills. So you have to demonstrate. Like, for example, what I find is the hardest thing when I do a ratings clinic is the spotlight, by far. And what I recommend to people before you come to a ratings, go out on a day that's similar to what you're going to do when you go to the instructor. Put a spot out, draw a circle with that upside down orange, string to 40 feet. Now launch, leave your motor idle, go to 300 feet, just idle it, come in, touch within that 40-foot circle. You can do that consistently. Basically, you're there. I can show somebody who can do that consistently how to do the other stuff. And what I found is that if they can do that, I've never had anybody that can do that and can't do the other stuff. They may not be able to do the other stuff, but I can show them how because they probably already know how. They just never really thought about it. Like, for example, this thing. Probably have done this. You'll get it right away. You got to show that you can control an oscillation in flight. Well, you already know how to do that. If you're landing within 40 foot of a target, you know how to do that. You just have never demonstrated it in flight. You can do that now. Anybody can go get there in one day. I've done a ratings clinic in one day for somebody who already has the skills. It's not instruction. It's just a test. And here's the thing. if you get your PPG 2 rating, you're eligible for $100, I think. Or it's $50.
No, $100.
Is it
$100? Yeah.
Okay, so it's $100. Now, the idea of that was to slightly offset the cost of the instructor. So I think the instructors are woefully underpaid. I mean, I go out and I watch an instructor, any number of guys, they're out there all day long. And it can be frustrating for days. And I'm thinking $2,500? Wow, that's a deal. I think I'm making squat doing publications. And I don't have the stress of somebody dying. So I think the whole instructor, but now if you get your rating, at least the instructor could charge $100 extra, and it doesn't cost anything. That was the idea of the training reimbursement. Okay, good question. Any other questions? Questions? We got the end of questions, the end of the meeting going once, going twice.
And the USPA meeting is
hereby adjourned. Thank you all.
Well, all right, guys, another episode of Talking PPG Radio. You've wasted a whole hour and something just listening to me. Well, not just me, but I'll just plan anyway. Hey, I'm glad you guys tuned in. Hopefully you enjoyed. We will get another one out to you soon. If there was some helpful information there, don't forget to go check out Britton Shaw's Endless Foot Drag. Hopefully most of you already have plans and you already know you're heading that way. So this is for those guys that didn't realize it was happening and wanted to get it out there. Meant to get it out there a little earlier, but hey, you know how it is. Busy here. And basically you got a chance to listen in on the aerospace seminar that was at Palm Bay that you guys missed, and also let you even listen in on kind of a general meeting of the USPA and some of the things and questions and that. And the biggest question I had there right there at the end was with experienced people, which I asked Britton, we talked about, if you remember, can you just get the rating without all, you know, if you've already, you know, been flying for a while. So hopefully that eases some of you guys' mind about maybe going to Britton Shaw's fly-in. You won't be spending hours and hours and hours learning something you already know. So, all right. Thank you again. I greatly appreciate it. If you have any comments, questions, please get in touch with me. Facebook me. Drop me an email. Whatever it takes to get in touch with me. Thanks a lot. Will Jones, Talking PPG Radio. Talk to you soon.